Hello, friends, and welcome to Spark My Muse. I'm your host, Lisa Colon-Delay, and today is Soul School Lesson 304, Was the Mother of God a Slave? Today I'm going to be reading a little bit about the work of Dr. Mitzi J. Smith, the J. Davidson Phillips Professor of New Testament at Columbia Theological Seminary in Decatur, Georgia. And this article was written by Candida Moss for the Culture section of the Daily Beast, entitled, Was the Virgin Mary Actually a Slave? The subtitle is, What appears to have been an intentional mistranslation has led to us misunderstanding Mary's status and that of Jesus himself. So if Mary, the mother of Jesus, was a slave, then Jesus would have been born into slavery. Now, this is a minority opinion, but I think it's worth discussing this and the scholarship around this, and also discussing why this also might not be true. The insights we can get from this discussion are quite interesting, and I wanted to delve down this today and see if we could learn a little bit from Dr. Smith. The article goes like this. The Christmas season celebrates, as we all know, the birth of Jesus. But it is also one of the few times in the year when many Christians think and talk about Mary, his mother. A fixture in crushes and the undoubted lead in nativity plays, Mary is as much the focus of the Christmas story as Christ, but very little is known about the young woman whom religious tradition remembers as the, quote, mother of God, unquote. Centuries of careful theological speculation have described her status and capacity for sin, but the scholarly theory hypothesizes that Mary may have been enslaved. Dr. Mitzi J. Smith, the J. Davidson Phillips Professor of New Testament at Columbia Theological Seminary in Decatur, Georgia, and Professor Extraordinarius at the Institute of Gender Studies, University of South Africa, has published an article on Mary as an enslaved woman in her co-edited volume, Bitter the Chastening Rod. This and other pieces build upon the work of South African scholar Winsome Munro and are part of her soon-to-be-published book, Rereading the Lukean Jesus for Liberation, Anointed Abolitionist Born of the Doulé Called Mary, published by Cascade Books. And my side note to this is that this book has already been published, because this article came out over a year ago. Smith talked to the Daily Beast about the project. Some readers will be shocked by Smith's suggestion. How could we think that Mary was enslaved? Well, the answer is that she says as much. The gospel that provides the most information about Mary is the Gospel of Luke. In fact, according to later tradition, Luke had met Mary and she served as his source for information about the events leading up to and including the birth of Jesus. When the angel Gabriel appeared to Mary in Luke 1 and told her that she would conceive and give birth to a son, Mary responded by identifying herself as a doulé, a Greek word that unambiguously means enslaved girl. In Luke 1:38, if we were reading any other ancient text written in Greek, we would assume that Mary was enslaved. As Smith told me, any first century reader of any ethnicity, culture, or religion living under the Roman Empire, a slave society where a significant segment of the population was enslaved, and an empire that relied on slave labor, would have taken Mary's self-designation as an enslaved woman seriously and as a declaration of her material or physical lived reality, and not simply as a metaphor. And we should, too. The Gospel of Luke was written, in the best scholarly estimates, sometime between A.D. 70 and 120. This was a period, Smith said, when Jewish people were enslaved in large numbers. For example, in the aftermath of the First Jewish War, when 97,000 residents of Jerusalem and its environs were captured. As Professor Catherine Hesser has shown in her book, Jewish Slavery in Antiquity, ancient Jews also practiced slaveholding. Slavery would have been an easy and natural frame of reference for anyone who heard this story. The problem is that this is not how English translations or other modern translations render the Greek. The New Revised Standard Version, for example, reads, Here I am, the servant of the Lord. Let it be according to your word. The problem, Smith said, is that when translations approach the text, they come to it with their own set of relatively modern, culturally determined biases. Bear in mind that when the masculine form of enslaved person, doulos, is found in the Gospel of Luke, it has consistently been translated as slave. The translational hiccup is bigger than just Jewish versions of the Gospel of Luke. As Clarice Martin, Smith, and others have noted, translators understand doulos to mean an enslaved person in almost every instance it appears in the New Testament. The exceptions are on those occasions when it refers to someone we understand to be theologically important, Mary, Moses, the Apostle Paul, or the disciples, or people with whom Christians identify, followers of Jesus in general. Translating doulos as servant, writes Martin, minimizes the full psychological weight of the institution of slavery itself. There's nothing emancipatory about altering Mary's social status. Doing this obscures the realities of ancient people's lives. The question of Mary's status has some important ramifications for how we think about Jesus himself. As Smith told me, in any slave society, a child born to an enslaved woman is born enslaved. In other words, Mary's child, Jesus, is born enslaved. This facet of Jesus' socioeconomic status can explain other details in his biography, explains Smith. Take, for instance, the fact that Jesus did not seem to have been active before the age of 30. Under legislation passed in AD 4 by Emperor Augustus, 30 was the age of mansumation for enslaved men, though women and many men waited much longer, if not the entirety of their lives, for freedom. Viewing Jesus as formerly enslaved can help explain why he waited to begin his ministry. When I asked her what her work means for understanding Jesus, Smith told me that this lens situates Jesus at the bottom of society into which he was born. He lived in stigmatized flesh, like so many other people during his lifetime and beyond, including Black people, people of color, poor people, immigrants, and so on. This Lukean interpretation for the many marginalized people and peoples whose ancestors were enslaved, this means that God did not save or exempt his son from that which God did not exempt or save our ancestors. The injustice of the world is an injustice that Jesus himself experienced. The punitive enslavement of Jesus creates ethical demands for Christians today. Smith said that, quote, many people today still suffer, unquote, as victims of enslavement and human trafficking. Quote, although their captives dehumanize them, they are God's children whom we must fight to free, unquote. Even with this pastoral takeaway, some readers might still be shocked by the theory. They might prefer to see this language as just a metaphor and feel that even raising the possibility of real enslavement is blasphemy. If that's you, then you don't have to come around to this point. Many scholars, full disclosure, I am among them, hold that the Gospel of Luke is historically removed from the events in the life of Jesus and thus isn't a great source for the specifics of his life. But it is worth asking yourself, why are we so horrified by the possibility that Mary, and by extension, Jesus, was enslaved? To put it bluntly, we have better scriptural evidence for Mary's enslaved status than we do for the ideal of her perpetual virginity, her traditional blue attire, or her doctrinal status as Mother of God. Given all of that, we should wonder what ideological and cultural commitments animate the erasure of this aspect of her identity here. Spoiler, it's racism and classism. European Christians have spent 1,500 years thinking of Mary as the white queen of heaven, and this revelation doesn't really fit with that. Recognizing that Luke portrays Mary as enslaved does not jeopardize any of the lofty theological claims that are made about her in Christian churches. The foundations of Christianity aren't shaking. So why are people worried about the social status when we should be concerned about exploitation? Ultimately, maybe this isn't about theology or history. It's about our values and ourselves. And that article was written by Candida Moss for the Daily Beast, and the article was entitled, "Was the Virgin Mary Actually a Slave?" This is drawn from the work of Dr. Mitzi J. Smith. These people, this article, Dr. Moss, Dr. Smith, I will be having links to all these things in the part two of this audio. To get to that part two, go to sparkmymuse.com or lisadelay.com and click for part two. This will take you to the Substack page, sparkmymuse.substack.com. And that's the page where I have photos, links, additional information that complements all the things I do that's just audio. I thought this was a fascinating article, something to really chew on here. This theory is not really well accepted. And another article called Mary the Slave of the Lord by Russell McKinney has the Lukean scripture, Luke 1:38, "Then Mary said, Behold the maidservant of the Lord, let it be to me according to your word. And the angel departed from her." That New King James Version says maidservant. It really downplays the enslaved part. That connotes something like Mary calling herself a slave of God, in much the same way Paul does. He calls himself a slave of Jesus Christ in Romans and Galatians and Titus. And Peter does the same. So does James and Jude. And Timothy is called a slave of Jesus Christ in Philippians. This is common to do, but it is also possible that Mary, being extremely poor, is an enslaved person, perhaps through an indentured servant situation, a bond servant out of debt, captive. And it's possible that Joseph buys her out of slavery or buys Jesus out of slavery. In that case, he could have other wives. But it looks as though Jesus really comes from poverty. He is truly at the lowest part of society in every way. And if he was an enslaved person, that would for sure put him at the most disdained and detested caste of society. In my opinion, it is not at any odds with what we know about the status of Jesus or how he speaks to the poor and the downtrodden so poignantly, so powerfully, so directly compared to other classes of people. The Sermon on the Mount is from a poor person to other poor people. As I came upon these articles, I found it to be fairly compelling. We are supposed to think of ourselves as slaves to Jesus, completely reliant, completely dedicated, that our whole lives are bound up with Christ. That is the exact language that Paul uses. And I think it is for dramatic effect. Paul didn't come from an enslaved class. He came from a wealthy class, an educated class. He also was trained in a trade of tent making. His family had enough money to buy Roman citizenship, which afforded him many legal rights and privileges that someone like Jesus from his low class could have never been afforded. So the fact that Paul wants to take a step down to an enslaved class that is bound to Jesus says a lot for the kind of humility, teachability, and reverence Paul has and demonstrates by example that we should have too. There is a concept that we ingest about the shame of a slave, the shame of an enslaved person, and it was not beneath Jesus. I think it's important to know that it was not beneath Jesus to be a slave. As the teacher, he washes their feet, which was something the lowest enslaved person would do, the lowest servant would do in a household. He does it on purpose. He doesn't feel demeaned by that in any way. He does it as an example for what they should do to each other, how they should serve each other. It's important for us to get our ego in check and continue to embrace humility. Whether Mary, the Mother of God, was an enslaved person or not is not a huge imposition on our beliefs in Christianity. It would be fitting if she was a slave and that the Savior of the world came from an enslaved mother and was enslaved himself and emancipated and then emancipated the rest of us. I hope this gave you something interesting to think about. If you've never heard of this before, I hope you might reach out to me or at least share this episode, and I'm interested to hear what you think. Thank you so much for joining me today. Until the next time we meet, I wish you blessing and peace.